Well, unfortunately, I can't opt out of getting old. Damn.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com. And as always, you can find me on Twitter at redrock_bball, another of the season recap podcasts for you today. Today we're going to be looking at the New York Knicks and to discuss all of the happenings from the 2017-18 New York Knicks season. I am joined by Basketball Monster's resident Knick fan, Greg Ehrenberg. Greg, welcome to the show.
Yeah, well, I really couldn't be any more excited than talking about the Knicks right now, because this is about as exciting as the Knicks season is going to get the offseason when they're not playing games. And I think from a fantasy perspective, what's going to be interesting is talking about what we're going to do with Porzingis next year.
Yeah, that's like obviously the big key with this team is Kristaps
Porzingis
not being there for probably the majority of the season, unless they bring him back in a small chunk at the end. There's clearly no need for them to do that, as they'll be piss poor for the majority of the year. But it is going to be an interesting season for this New York Knicks team. But Greg, the first things first, they have a new coach. David Fizdale is in charge after Jeff Hornacek's bumbling, stumbling couple of years in charge. What do you think as a Knicks fan of the Fizdale hire?
Well, for starters, great deal for Fizdale, because he's going to get paid a lot of money to probably only work there for a year and a half. He gets summers off. Summer starts early. So good deal for him, because this team is not good. And we kind of see this happen with the Knicks all the time. I think it's now 11 coaches for them in the last 16 years. It's really ridiculous. The longest tenured coach they had was maybe Woodson. No, it wasn't Woodson. I can't even remember off the top of my head. But at least for Fizdale, I think that he could do a decent job developing some of the young players. He does seem to have a pretty good rapport with a lot of the guys around the league. So with the Knicks having a fairly attractable market, I think maybe down the road, somebody like Fizdale could attract free agents to them there. I know that there's been some articles written in New York papers that maybe this is an attempt to sign LeBron. It's not happening. He's not going there. Nope. But I think that he's probably one of the more competent coaches they've had in recent memory, so that's a step up for them.
The interesting thing with Fizdale, we hear this, but his great relationship with players, but the reason he got fired is because he had a poor relationship with a player, and that is Marc Gasol. So that's an interesting juxtaposition, I guess. But yeah, many players do speak quite highly of Fizdale. We'll see. He was quite, I guess, important in the Grizzlies, especially with Gasol being able to extend his game out to three, gave him that sort of confidence. So we'll see if that means a change in playing style in New York at all. We're obviously over a year removed from the Phil Jackson triangle-based infusion into the offensive system, so Fizdale won't have any of that hanging over his shoulder. They have two picks in the upcoming draft, pick 9 and pick 37. They had pick 8 last year where they selected Frank Ntilikina, so pick 9. They're going to be in a zone for a guy, maybe it's Trae Young. We've heard buzz around his name, Colin Sexton, as well in that spot. They should be looking at guys, wing players, maybe one of the Bridgeses in that spot, but many different options. And we're going to cover that more in the draft preview stuff that we look at with this team. But free agency wise, Greg, Enes Kanter has an $18.6 million player option. Do you think that he's going to pick that up?
But it's pretty hard to say. I haven't really read a whole lot on what he plans to do right now. I think that he probably, if I'm him, I pick up the player option, mostly because if Porzingis is going to be out for most of the year, I think Kanter could put up really gaudy counting stats, and I think that could lead to a team maybe like the Knicks or another not-too-smart organization to give Kanter a really big contract after this year. So if I'm him, I'm probably picking up that player option for the $18.6 million, and I'm going to see, because he would, I think that I would probably have him pegged for something like 18 points, 11 rebounds. He could put up really big numbers next year. And I think that could really help him get a bigger contract in free agency.
Yeah, I think he has to pick up that player option as well. We've also got Kylo Quinn with a $4.3 million player option. I think he's a chance to decline that and maybe try and lock himself in for a three-year deal. And if Ron Baker hasn't already picked up his player option by the time you're listening to this, he definitely will. $4.5 million. He would not be on an NBA roster if he didn't have this player option for next season. So shout out again to the Knicks front office for that contract. The unrestricted guys, Jarrett Jack, who, again, should not be back on this team. Michael Beasley's an interesting one. He had moments. But, Greg, do you think that he would be someone that Knicks would be looking to bring back, especially with Porzingis out? We saw him fill in there and do a lot offensively, but it's not as though he necessarily helps the team a huge amount.
Yeah, so one thing that was weird about Beasley is that he kind of seemed to have a poor relationship with Hornacek towards the end of the year, and I think that contributed to some of his bad play. The one thing that Beasley does extremely well is he could score the basketball and he could do it fairly efficiently. So I think that Beasley is somebody who the Knicks will probably look to bring back next year, especially because he was kind of a fan favorite player. He played fairly well for a lot of the season. And then the other thing also is that they have a need for him. Like you said, Porzingis is going to be out. Beasley could fill in some of that offense. And I think that for a team that's really going to be hurting to put an attractive product out on the court, Beasley's somebody who helps them a little bit in that sense.
They've got a couple of other free agents, Isaiah Hicks and Luke Kornet, the two two-way guys. They're restricted players, nothing too exciting about them. Troy Williams has a non-guaranteed deal, as does Trey Burke. Greg, there is absolutely zero chance that the Knicks aren't guaranteeing Trey Burke's deal after. I know you were impressed by his late-season surge.
Yeah, well, there was a couple reasons that I liked it a lot. Number one, I was a little ahead on this one from a DFS standpoint, so he helped me win some money. So I liked Trey Burke a lot from that point in time. So maybe I have a little bit more of an attachment to Trey Burke than I should have had. But with that said, also, Trey Burke had a pretty interesting story. Basically, he was very highly regarded out of Michigan. I'm sure everybody remembers him from there. He was a high draft pick. And then he came into the league. He was kind of okay his rookie year. He was definitely underwhelming compared to the expectations that I had for him. And then he just kind of fell off the map completely. He resurfaced in the G League as a really good player this year. And one thing that he said is that when he came into the draft, came into the league, he kind of felt that he didn't need to work as hard. He felt like he had already made it. And then he really recommitted himself and was doing two-a-day workouts last year in the G League, which he said he hadn't done since his college days. And so I think that there's something to be said for him upping his work ethic and that contributing to success for him at the NBA level last year. So now I think the interesting question is, with Trey Burke, what do we expect from him going forward? So Josh, what do you expect from Burke this season?
It remains to be seen exactly what Fizdale thinks of Frank Ntilikina, whether he thinks that he's a one or a two. I think they should be trying to play him at the one. But, you know, Burke was interesting there at that spot. They could also, you know, be pushing Timmy Hardaway down to the three and play those three as the starting one, two, and three. And I think that's a distinct possibility. I think that Burke has a chance to establish himself as the starter for this team heading into next season. I don't think that he'll be able to maintain the 50% shooting from the field that he had this year. That seems quite anomalous. It's for a guy that wasn't a great shooter through the other years of his career. And yes, he shot that well in the G League, so maybe there's something to be said that he has improved that. But he hit, you know, a ridiculous amount. 56% of his two-point attempts is a huge, huge amount for a guy who plays as a point guard. That's like center-level players. You're talking that the only guys on the team who hit two-pointers at a higher rate were Hernan Gomez in his limited time, Kylo Quinn, Enes Kanter, and weirdly enough, Troy Williams. He was hitting those mid-range shots at, you know, ludicrous rates. Between 16 feet and the three-point line, he was hitting his shots at 57%. It's just not going to continue. He can't possibly shoot at that level, and that could have an impact on what he's able to do. But otherwise, yeah, the assist numbers were good. But one thing that's plagued Trey Burke throughout his career fantasy-wise, he doesn't get steals. And that's something that always holds these guys back from being, you know, really strong point guards. And if the shooting drops off and he's not getting those defensive numbers, which can be consistent, then that does mean that the numbers and the value for him could swing pretty wildly if, you know, he's not hitting those deep long twos at 57%, which of course he won't be able to.
One thing also to add on to that, which is really crazy to me. So he shot that well from mid-range this year, but he only shot 65% from the free throw line. Yeah, historically, he's been a very good free throw shooter. So that's like a really, really bizarre type stat to me. So I would expect the field goal shooting to go down next year, and I would expect the free throw shooting to go up a little bit. But if he's going to take over the starting point guard job, he's going to be a very fantasy-relevant player because there's going to be a lot of usage for him. And one thing he showed last year is he is not afraid to shoot the ball when he's on the court at all. So he could really eat up a ton of usage and could be a pretty valuable fantasy player next season.
According to Clean the Glass, he was in the 93rd percentile at finishing at the rim at 71% and 98th percentile on mid-range shooting, which are just ludicrously high numbers, which appear unlikely to necessarily sustain for Trey Burke. One thing that I did find interesting with this team, that they were mid-range in pace for the year, 15th, 20th with their offensive rating, 23rd in their defensive rating, but something that should be able to change, and I think Fizdale will accomplish this, was the fact that they took the most number of two-point attempts in the entire NBA and the 29th most three-point attempts, obviously antithetical to how the NBA is going about their business most of these times. To be so two-point heavy or two-point reliant is something I think Fizdale will look to change. Also, barely getting to the free throw line, ranked 28th in free throw attempts across the NBA. So there's an opportunity here to change the way when you're ranked 28th in free throw attempt rate and 29th in three-point attempt rate. They're the two things that really can spark an offense, and if Fizdale can change that offensive mindset and change that scheme a little bit, that could really help this team become better despite the talent deficiency they're going to have without Porzingis. So maybe they could surprise just by changing a few of those things around.
Yeah, one thing that definitely hurts the Knicks with having when they were in the Phil Jackson era with Hornacek as the coach, they had Rambis as the coach, is there was a real pushback against any kind of advanced analytics or kind of progressive type thinking in the NBA, to the point where Phil Jackson even said during the Warriors championship run the first time, is that a team that shoots a lot of three-pointers will never win a championship.
How's it
going? To what you said about the Knicks being able to add value just by changing to Fizdale at the coaches, just having somebody who's a reasonably intelligent basketball person is a massive upgrade to anything that the Knicks do.
Yeah, that is accurate. They finished last season 29-53, and there's a massive chance that they don't even get to that next season and put themselves right in contention for a top three pick without Porzingis. But that is going to open up opportunities for many different players on this team. And let's talk about what Kanter did this year. He only played 26 minutes per game. He's 26 years of age. He averaged 14 and 11, and of course we know that he's not providing defensive numbers. Half a steal, half a block, but 59% from the field, 85% from the free throw line. That's elite efficiency. And if he gets an extra 2 minutes per game and the usage goes from 22% to 25%, which again is not something that should be considered crazy given the absence of Porzingis, we're talking about big numbers that could be coming from Kanter next season. And he was 55th ranked player this season, a top 40 season. I don't think is a crazy expectation for Ennis for next season.
No, not at all, because especially with Porzingis being off the floor, if we look at his per 36 minute stats without Porzingis on the court, and obviously he's not going to play 36 minutes, but still it was about 20 points and 16 rebounds per 36 minutes with Porzingis off the court. The fit with Porzingis and Kanter together is a little bit wonky because Porzingis should be playing center, and the Knicks haven't figured that out for the entire time he's been in the league. So the idea now that we're going to have Kanter as really being the sole rebounder, especially if they're going to be running a starting lineup with possibly Beasley, a power forward, and Kanter at center. Obviously, we don't know for sure that either or both of them are going to be back next year, but that figures to be a massive amount of rebounds for Kanter if that's a starting lineup.
He's also a guy that was taking some threes, and then that was just completely eliminated from his game last season. 5% of his shots the year before in Oklahoma City were three-pointers. He didn't necessarily hit them at a great rate, just 13%. That's obviously pretty piss poor. And he was at 48% the year prior, but he just didn't take any threes at all last season. He might have taken one or two, but he barely took a three. And that's something that could add into his game as well, perhaps adding just an extra little bit of value with Fizdale around. That effect he had on Marcus Gasol doing that could also be applied to Enes Kanter for next season. So it's something to bear in mind if we see Enes coming out and hitting or attempting one and a half threes per game in the preseason. I'd expect that to be a trend that could stick into the regular season. But of course, we don't know that yet. The other guy who's going to get a bump in his usage is Timmy Hardaway. He was the 86th ranked player this season and played 33 minutes, dealt with stress reactions in his leg, averaged 17.5 points with 2.3 triples, 4 boards and almost 3 assists, over a steal, 42, 82 and 32 was his percentage splits, and had a usage of 24%. But he's a guy that you would have to think is going to be pushing up close to the 29-30 percentage usage mark, because who else is going to take on the offensive load here, Greg?
Yeah, it's going to be a lot of if Beasley's back, then the only guys who are really going to be using usage at all for the Knicks is going to be Burke, Hardaway, Canner, and Beasley. I can't really see anybody else being a scorer for this team. So if we look at Hardaway's numbers last year with Porzingis off the floor, he was at a 25% usage rating. He scored over 20 points per game, about 4 rebounds, 3 assists. Hardaway's kind of interesting because, in terms of a real basketball perspective, it seemed like such a bad contract when the Knicks gave it to him, because it was. They overpaid him. They were bidding against themselves. But after seeing the results per dollar, I don't think that Hardaway is quite as bad of a contract as I thought it was when they first signed it. I still don't agree with the process that got them there, because they overpaid him for no reason whatsoever. They just blew other teams out of the water who weren't going to pay him that amount of money. But the contract is not quite the albatross that I thought it was going to be. So how do you feel about the Hardaway contract? Because I think we all thought it was terrible at the time it was signed.
Yeah, exactly. What you said, that the process was poor, but given he is going to have to be, he's probably going to be close to a 20-point per game scorer next season, that, you know, at least, yeah, running with this team, and he's heading into his prime. He's 26 years of age. He's still got some defensive issues, but he's shown an increased ability to handle the ball. He got some steals last season, hit his threes. I think it's still an overpay, clearly, but it's not as horrendous as what it looked at the beginning of last season. He's proven to be a useful player and an NBA caliber starter on maybe not necessarily a good team, but at least an average team, which the Knicks aren't. So I think that he's going to probably be their best player next season, and a guy who could push up into the top 60 in terms of fantasy numbers as he becomes a 20-point per game scorer. And if he doesn't have to deal with injuries, like, he played 33 minutes per game this season, he could very easily be at 35 next year if he doesn't have that leg problem bothering him. So He was impressive, and he did exceed my, maybe not minimal expectations, but he was a guy that that played quite well despite a horrendous start to the season when people were writing him off left, right, and center. Let's talk Porzingis. Greg, he tore his ACL, was having an excellent season, a usage of almost 32%, almost 23 points and 6.5 rebounds, 2 threes, 0.8 steals and 2.4 blocks. We saw his efficiency up at the start of the year. It started to dwindle as the season went on, and that's been a hallmark of Porzingis' career, hot starts and tapering off. Do you think that he plays at all next season?
It's hard to say, because the Knicks are such an incompetent organization. I would say that he probably shouldn't play next year, because there's not going to be a reason for it. I think there was an article that came out, it was about last week, that said he still doesn't have a timetable. It is possible that he misses the entire season. I just don't see why they get halfway through the season and they decide, hey, we're going to bring Porzingis back on a minutes restriction, when they probably have the worst record in the league. So from a fantasy perspective, I know, because we've talked about this before, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but I think you're going to end up agreeing with this. Let somebody else overdraft Porzingis and let him be their issue. You're in a situation where you have the last pick of the draft and he's still available, and there's an injury spot on your roster, you could put him on the injured reserve, then it makes sense. Hey, you draft him, you put him on the injured reserve, you pick up a free agent, and if somebody else gets hurt on your team, then you drop Porzingis from that spot and you put that guy on. From a fantasy perspective, there's probably not going to be much reason to draft Porzingis this year. There's a good chance he doesn't play. If he does play, it's going to be coming back with a minutes restriction, and he's not going to be relevant at all until the end of the year, if at all. So let him be somebody else's headache to burn a roster spot.
Yeah, that's pretty much nearly always my idea. Like, yeah, the same thing with Isaiah Thomas and Zach LaVine heading into this season. Jabari Parker, someone else can draft them. I want nothing to do with them at the spots that they go in. Sure, they'll be back in January, and maybe Porzingis, maybe he does come back in February, who knows, but he'll come back on a limited amount. He will struggle with his movement, with his defense, with his shooting percentages. It happens to all these guys with long-term injuries. This is just what we've seen the pattern. It's a rarity. It's an exception where someone comes back and is as good, if not better, in that first season. Now, if we're talking about 19-20, then I have pretty good confidence that he'll come back and be a guy that challenges the top 20. But for next season, if you're in a dynasty league with a team that's not looking to compete, maybe you can get a discount off off the Porzingis owner who is looking to compete this season. Perhaps you can if they're worried, oh man, he's always hurt, he tore his ACL. That shit doesn't bother me. I'd be happy to do it looking forward to 19-20 season, but not necessarily for this upcoming year. Courtney Lee. He had a weird season. He's going to turn 33 at the beginning of the year. He played 76 games in 30 minutes, averaged 12, 3 and 2.5, 1.5 triples, a steal, 45 and 92% from the line for Lee, 41% from three, but he's just such a mediocre fantasy guy, 115th this season. And at the age of heading into the age of 33, there's a chance the Knicks look to bring in a wing in the draft. And given where this team is looking towards rebuilding, I think there's a chance that Lee sees fewer minutes next season than what he did this year. Or do you have a differing opinion on that?
No, not at all. I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. And it's a pretty shitty contract that Courtney Lee has also. It was a weird contract when the Knicks gave it to him, and he doesn't really fit in with what they're doing. We kind of saw that towards the end of last year where his minutes really dropped off. He was even, let me see what his minutes were at the end of the year. I think I remember him being close to almost like DNPs towards the end of the year. There were some games where he's playing minutes in like the teens. So it's hard to see what his role is going to be for the team next year. And then it's not a tradable contract either. There's nobody who I think is going to want to take on 2 years, $25 million of Courtney Lee. So I think the Knicks are kind of stuck with him, and he's just going to be that role of the veteran who's on the end of the bench and kind of mentors players, which the Knicks, I feel like, always get stuck with those contracts.
He played only 22 minutes per game over the last 17 games of the season with about 7 DMPs mixed in there as Hornacek was going back and forth between him and Frank Ntilikina, and again, complete nonsense in terms of the coaching decisions there. And at the end of the year, we saw Lee's minutes actually start to rise, and he played 30, 28, and 27 minutes in the last three games of the season. For what purpose, I've got no idea. But he can be a useful player who can be a defender who can hit threes and be efficient, but on a team like this, like, he's not a guy that's going to increase his usage and become this excellent fantasy guy. There is an opportunity, obviously, with Porzingis not around, but I just don't see it for Lee. And if they want Frank to be the two, they've got Trey Burke, they can play Ntilikina, and they can put Hardaway at the three. It is going to be a real limit, I think, for Lee heading into next season as he enters his age 33 season. Kylo Quinn, Greg, he is what he is. This is who he is. He played only 18 minutes, but averaged 7 and 6. He was the 125th ranked player in fantasy still, despite those numbers, because he got you two assists. He had 1.3 blocks, and he shot 58 and 77, and those are elite percentages as a big man. And when he plays big minutes, he puts up big numbers. It's been a constant through O'Quinn's career, but he just can't get those big minutes on a consistent enough basis. I think he won't be with this team next season, but what did you think just watching him as a Knicks fan? Like, how did you think that O'Quinn's season went, and did he deserve more minutes?
It's hard to say, because ideally Porzingis would have been the center and Kylo Quinn probably would have played even less minutes.
Yep.
So from that standpoint, I would say no, because of who else is on the roster. But when you consider that the Knicks were kind of insistent on Porzingis being a power forward next year, under that paradigm, yes, Kylo Quinn should have played more minutes. With that said, Kylo Quinn next year, if he gets to a place where he's going to play a lot of minutes, I think that he's like a really strong fantasy sleeper, because he's somebody who definitely anybody who plays DFS knows that a cock game could happen at any time. If there's a game where he gets 30 minutes, like, the ceiling is ridiculous. He has games where he could score 20 points, put up 15 rebounds, and block a couple shots. So I'd be really interested to see what it would look like him playing extended minutes with a team. And it's hard to say, would he have conditioning issues? What would happen? Just because we've never seen a team give him that opportunity before, but he's always been so good in limited minutes.
He played 27 games between 20 and 29 minutes last season, according to Basketball Reference, and averaged out to 23 minutes per game in those 27 contests. Averaged 11 and 9 with 2.5 assists, almost 2 blocks, and a little bit under 1 steal, and shot 60% from the field and 77% from the line for a true shooting of 65%. and was really impactful. And if he's getting 24 minutes per game, he is an absolute lock for the top 100, just almost based on those percentages alone. But you throw in two blocks, 60%, 77 from the line, almost 10 boards and you know, 11, 12 points. Like that's a ton of value, and he is going to be a name to watch for sure. Manny Moutier came across in a trade from Denver, and of course, you've got to prioritize the guy who's been shit through the first 3 years of his NBA career, so you can play him over the guy you just drafted in the lottery. Because if there's one thing, Greg, that I know works really well for young players, it's destroying their confidence. So that's always the move that you should be going with. How bad was Moutier, and why isn't he the worst player in the NBA?
Well, you know what's really funny is, I don't know if you remember this, but we were doing the trade deadline show together,
yep,
and the Knicks traded for Moutier, and at the time I said that I thought that he was a worthwhile gamble for a second-round pick, but I said my number one concern is that they were going to bring in Moutier, and it was going to be at the expense of giving Neal Akina minutes down the stretch, and that's basically exactly what happened. So the coaching decisions, and overall, that's a situation where the front office should have stepped in too and said, like, hey, we're not playing Moutier anymore, because maybe you try Moutier out as a starter a couple games and see what happens, but he played significant minutes down the entire stretch of the season. He was dog shit the entire time. So it just didn't make any sense. And the other thing, too, is that people were writing about it in like the New York Post and other New York publications saying you have to give Moutier a chance because he's a former lottery. He's a former first-round pick who's still young and maybe could turn around in the league. How about giving Neal Akina a chance, who is also a more current first-round pick, who's even younger, and we don't know what he is yet? I'm fairly confident that Moutier is absolute dog shit.
He had a couple of games where his first game for New York, 14 points, 10 assists. All right, that's fine. He had a 20-7 game. He had a 19-4 game. He had some double-digit scoring games, but they come on high usage. They're inefficient. He struggles so much defensively. Like a true shooting during his time in New York at 42.8% is horrendous. A negative 4.3 box score plus minus, horrendous. Win shares, somehow negative. Like he contributed, he didn't even add anything. An on-off of negative 11.7. That is just disgusting. Like these are not good numbers from Moutier. He shouldn't be playing above Trey Burke. He shouldn't be playing above Frank Ntilikina. We will see, but he's not good. Let's have a look at what he did during his time in New York in terms of a per game stat numbers, because they might look all right. Let's have a look. 22 minutes per game. 9 points, 2.6 rebounds, 4 assists, 0.9 steals. Yeah, that's not bad. But 37% from the field, 19% from 3, 69%
giggity
from the free throw line. Yeah, nothing too exciting. Now, he is still 21. I'll give him that caveat. It was his third season, but I'm pretty ready to close the book on Moutier being a starter-level player, as I know you are, and hopefully Fizdale doesn't make those sort of nonsense decisions that we saw last year from Jeffy Hornacek. Now, Jarrett Jack started... anytime he starts more than one game, it's too many games. Took over from Ramon Sessions, who also should never have been starting. But I understand you're doing it early on when Frank wasn't ready, but Jack just persisted through the season. But I don't think we're seeing 35-year-old Jarrett Jack play in the NBA next season, do you?
No, probably not. When was the last time that he played prior to the season? He had been out of the league for, what was it, 2 years?
Yeah, it was back in where he played for Brooklyn when he tore his ACL. And he was having an okay year as the starter there in Brooklyn, but that was it, almost 2 years ago.
Yeah, I mean, it's always good to take somebody who's 35 years old, advanced age, has been in the league for 2 years, and you say, like, oh, this is – and then, yeah, coming off the ACL and just be like, yeah, this is our starting point guard now. And the other thing, too, is going back to the really frustrating decision to play Moutier over Neal Akina down the stretch of the season, it really never made sense to be playing Jarrett Jack at all, because not only do we know what Jarrett Jack is, obviously, at this point in his career, and he's finished, but why was Jarrett Jack ever getting minutes over Neal Akina before Moutier was even in the picture? Like, what was the idea that the Knicks were looking at and they were saying that, oh, we need Jarrett Jack to compete this season? Like, there was no point where the team should have thought, like, we have a reasonable opportunity to make the playoffs to be a good team this year. So the Jarrett Jack playing time was also really confusing, because I don't think that Jarrett Jack makes sense really on any team in the league, but especially not a rebuilding team that should be giving minutes to young players.
Exactly. Let's talk Frank Neal Akina now. We've referenced him a little bit already. I spoke about him at length on part 2 of the 2017 draft recap series. He still hasn't turned 20 years of age. He played 22 minutes per game and averaged 6, 2, and 3. 0.6 triples, 0.8 steals, shot 36% from the field, 72% from the line, and 32% from three for an atrocious true shooting of 44%. I don't think there's much argument there. But, Greg, I would put it out there that he's probably a top 10 point guard defender in the NBA already. Given what we saw from him, that means that he should be able to stick onto the court. His advanced numbers were putrid, negative 3.9 box score plus minus, negative win shares, much like Moutier. But a positive factor on off because of his ability to create, you know, issues for other players defensively. What did you see from Nil Aquino, given how young he is, one of the youngest players in the NBA, that we could maybe look forward to next season?
So I don't know if this is fair to Nil Aquino, but what he's always going to be compared to is going to be what has Dennis Smith Jr. become. Because at the time of the draft, I think most people were looking at Nil Aquino and saying that the two options the Knicks really had at that spot were either going to be Nil Aquino or Dennis Smith Jr. They went with Nil Aquino, and I think that most fans, myself included, want him to go with Dennis Smith. And it's not even a knock on Nil Aquino. It's more just that where the Knicks were at as a team with so little talent on the roster, I felt that Dennis Smith Jr. was really the home run pick who had potential to be a superstar-type player. I think Nil Aquino is fine as a player. I don't think he's ever going to be too fantasy relevant unless he really gets enough minutes where the steal numbers are just crazy, because that is the one avenue I see him being a good fantasy contributor is in the steals department. But when the Knicks had the opportunity to draft Dennis Smith Jr., who could be an all-star level point guard, I think that if he becomes that, Knicks fans are always going to be a little bit disappointed with Nil Aquino. I do think he's going to be a really strong defensive player, but for right now where the Knicks are at, I don't really think that he was the right choice for them in hindsight.
He played 9 games last season of over 30 minutes, and in that time, he racked up 42 assists in those 9 games. So we're talking about over 4 assists per game there, and that's something that he can, you know, work on. The steals is obviously the big one that he's going to be able to do, and we saw him have multiple games with big steal numbers, especially early in the season. Like, he had an 11-assist, 3-steal game against the Spurs in December. He had a 6-steal game against the Cavs early in November, an 8-assist, 5-steal game against Houston at the start of November. But then we saw him be really limited in terms of the playing time, and that did impact what he was able to do. But just look at the last 2 games of the year. This is something, and again, we don't want to overrate those last 2 games too much, but 40 minutes against the Cavs, 17-6-5 with a 1-1. The next game against the Cavs, 16-4-4 with 4 steals and a block. He showed an ability to up his usage only at 20%, so it wasn't like going at crazy levels, was efficient, shot the ball well, distributed it, got his steals in, and that is what he can do. And if someone can average 2 steals per game and 6 assists per game, that's a fantasy-relevant player right there. I'm not sure the 6 assists, if he's going to play off the ball, are necessarily going to come, but he could also be a guy that hits 2 threes to go with 2 steals and averages 13 points. And very similar, I guess, to what Courtney Lee has been doing, but I think Nil Aquino's got higher upside in terms of the steals ability and the ability to increase his offensive usage output. So there is some hope there, but like you, I don't think that his fantasy ceiling is all that high, because he's never going to be a 27 usage guy that averages 20 points per game. And now that they're playing him out of position, which remains to be seen with Fizdale, that could limit that upside in the assist category also.
Yeah, I think the other thing that could really hurt him is who are the Knicks going to draft this year? Because yeah, I think that there's a really strong chance that whoever ends up dropping to them, whether it ends up being, I think Trae Young seems like somebody that the Knicks would end up picking. And I also think that he is somebody who kind of makes sense as the 8th pick.
I think so too. I can see that happening, especially pairing it with Nil Aquino, because we know Young has the defensive limitations, but you can put Frank on whoever that number, if it's a point guard or it's a 2, Nil Aquino can go and, you know, potentially shut them down and enable Young to go and float out to someone else.
Yeah, I think one thing that would be interesting is what happens with Trey Burke and Nil Aquino if they draft somebody like Young, and then you just hope that either Moutier doesn't make the team next year, or he just sits at the end of the bench and doesn't play any minutes in that situation, which I think probably should happen even if they don't draft a point guard.
We haven't mentioned the name Joakim Noah yet. He only played 7 games, 6 minutes per game, and I landed at least one punch on Jeff Hornacek's face at some point during the season. Hornacek is obviously gone. He wants to make amends and rejoin the team this season. Should we be expecting Noah to play a role, especially with Porzingis gone, especially considering O'Quinn might be somewhere else. Is Noah sliding into that backup center role again? And maybe we're getting 20 minutes per game and 1.3 blocks and 4 assists, that weird sort of skill set that he has. Can you see a bounce back from Noah, even though he is 33 years of age at this point?
No. One thing I do think that's interesting is, so the Noah contract is obviously unloadable. It would seem like the Knicks are stuck with him. Except with that said, he really does seem to want out, and it remains to be seen if that's going to change now that Hornacek is out of the picture. But if there is one potential reason that I could see the Knicks getting out, is that Thibodeau seems to really like to pick up his old Bulls players, and I think I see an avenue where maybe the Timber Bulls would be willing to pick up Joakim Noah if there was some kind of buyout situation. So it's kind of weird that because Thibodeau is still in the league, I think that there is a very slim chance of an out with Noah.
We're recording this podcast in advance of it being released. So by the time this is released, there's a couple of things that could have happened. Noah could have been traded to the Timberwolves, or Tom Thibodeau could have been fired. Either of those things are equally in play at this point. So if that has happened by the time you're listening to this, I apologize. We are recording a little bit earlier, as I mentioned on one of the other shows, because I am heading overseas for a little bit of time to have a break. But that's a possibility, because we know that there's the reports out that Thibodeau is feuding with Karl Anthony Towns because he's just a miserable old prick, and that's what's going to happen, as I've mentioned plenty of times, that people are going to get pissed off at that sort of thing. But yeah, look, Noah is a possibility for there. Oh, Jesus, that would... Oh, my God, that is so depressing to think about. One more player I want to talk about here, Greg, before I let you go, and that's the second-round selection from the 2017 NBA draft, Damian Dotson, who had his moments this year, shot the ball extremely well in the G League, only played 44 games and 11 minutes per game, averaging 4 points. But another one of those guys that, if we're looking in rebuilding mode, could he be in line to take a larger role here, playing behind Tim Hardaway in that similar Tim Hardaway role as that knockdown shooter, maybe even taking a few of Courtney Lee's minutes? Did you like anything that you saw from Dotson last season? And does he have rotation potential, not starter potential, but rotation potential coming up?
So here's my biggest issue with Dotson is he did look okay at times, but he was not a young rookie. He was a 24-year-old rookie last year. So I don't really think that he's somebody who carves out a role for himself or sticks in the league, because while he was okay for a rookie last year, I just question how much more is he going to develop? How much better is he going to get at 24 years old, where he only has a couple years of his athletic peak left? So if we're also expecting the Knicks to probably go out and end up drafting a guard, because that's what seems most likely in that spot, I'm not sure that Dotson ends up making the roster next year, or even if he does, how much he really ends up playing.
Well, I know one thing for sure. I know he's better than Ron Baker at this point. He averaged 18 points per game in the G League, shot 39% from three, which is similar to what he did in college at Houston, where he was a 40% three-point shooter. So there is that ability there, but yeah, there is a little bit of a squeeze happening given those other subpar guards that are around Baker and Moutier still under contract for next season. Greg, I reckon that does it for the Knicks, unless you have extended thoughts on Lance Thomas you want to share with us.
Oh, Lance Thomas. The only one thing I'll say really quickly about Lance Thomas is I actually did get to do some broadcasting this year for a Knicks game, and I ate dinner with Walt Clyde Frazier. And before the game, it was a Knicks-Cavs game. I asked him what he thought was going to happen. He predicted a really big Lance Thomas game, and Lance Thomas did not have a really big game.
I'll give a shout out to Lance Thomas because he follows me on Twitter, so I know he's a big fan of the show. So shout out to you, Lance, for doing what you are. For doing what you do. Defensively, he's still solid, but offensively, he has been struggling, and with the shooting, still hit 40% from three, but inability to finish from 2-point range has been an issue. But that's enough about Lance Thomas. Greg, where can everybody find you on Twitter? And you can go ahead and plug your podcast and your baseball work and all that other sort of stuff that you're doing, because people do ask me all the time, where do I go get fantasy baseball advice? Well, this is the man right here.
Yeah, so you guys follow me on Twitter at GAaronbergDFS. And then all the stuff I do, I put up on my Twitter page. I do work for DraftKings. I do writing work for rotopros.com. So you can check out any of that stuff to get my work. And then my podcast is the Foul Balls Podcast. You can find it on Stitcher. It's on iTunes. It's on SoundCloud. And I always post a link on Twitter also.
Of course, this podcast is available at all those outlets as well. So go subscribe to this one. Go subscribe to Greg's Foul Balls and leave us a 5-star rating and review. Greg, thanks for coming on. We'll chat to you again soon for another one of these team recap podcasts. Greg, you still there?
Oh, sorry. You know what happened? The last time we did one of these and you kind of did the sign off, you started playing the music and I started saying something back to you and it kind of made like a weird sound interaction. So I tried to be quiet there and it did the opposite of what happened is what happened last time.
We'll get it right at some point. Well, now I'm going to play the music now. So thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya. Ennis Cantor.